And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 694. Going to start talking some 2024 BABIP strugglers this past season to see if it was an outlier, if something changed. Should we be concerned? Should we be excited for a dip and buy the dip? Things along those lines. A lot of speculation, of course, because it is late October and we're talking speculation for potentially 2025. So we'll see how that goes and probably go down some other banters as well. You can find me on Twitter at BDentric and my co-host, as usual, early in the week on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. Ben Tate, how you doing, my friend?
Doing great, Bubba. Glad to be back again. And I know it's we're talking about baseball, but now NBA starting. We were talking about that being on now. We both have it on in the background. And it's good to be – I moved on from my basketball prep, so I guess now I could focus only on baseball prep technically. But I'm going to wait a little bit. But like we were saying, we'll dig into 2024 some more before we go into 2025. And I think BABIP's a good way to look at some underperformers and seeing if someone got unlucky or not. So should be a good show.
Yeah, it's a good way to kind of delve into, you know, some guys might just be their profile. Some guys that, you know, sometimes they're usually a big BABIP guy took a massive drop. And like we talked about Pete Alonso, didn't put him on the list because that was a talking point for Pete Alonso. Like the BABIP situation has been an issue for a guy like Big Meat Pete. So we'll talk about a few guys here. We won't hit on all of them. I just basically looked at fan graphs, simple stuff for people at home. But before we get into the BABIP players, I figured I'd ask you, being a Yankees fan, for the first time since 1981, I wasn't even born yet compared to all the old jokes I get from everybody. I was not even born yet. We get a Yankees-Dodgers World Series, which I've gone two ways on this. Obviously, beat LA. That's just my mantra for life. It's not going to change. But I see all the arguments like, oh, it's the evil empire versus the West Coast evil empire. Both true. But if you take a step back as a baseball fan, this is pretty dang awesome. Like the history of baseball, two of the best franchises, you get the AL MVP versus the NL MVP. You basically get quasi MVPs in Betts and Soto. Like you have this just amazing storyline. You get Yamamoto on the big stage. You get, you know, Flaherty. This story just continues on. You got Cole. Can he figure it out? Like a million storylines, obviously. You're a Yankees fan, though. See, I'm just a Giants fan that hates the Dodgers. There's a difference. This is an easy call for me, but I got to root for the Yankees right now, which is not easy for me to do. You always root for the Yankees. So how are we feeling? What's your prediction for this series?
Oh, yeah. So the last time they made it the World Series, I was a freshman in college. I remember watching it in the dorm room. So it's been a while for me, too, to have my team in the World Series. I mean, longer than you. You've been luckier than I have as a Giants fan. But I definitely feel like the Dodgers are the favorite just because of those three. Well, I mean, Freddie's hurt, and that really – I mean, I remember watching him. He could barely walk. But bad. Because, I don't know, I saw someone say that the Yankees' pitching is probably better because the Dodgers are doing bullpen games and everyone's hurt anyway. So I guess it should be a pretty evenly matched series. I think the Dodgers are the betting favorite. And I don't know. It also, too, it's weird how it starts so late because, I mean, everything was wrapped up a couple – I mean, I think tonight would have been game seven for the Yankees or maybe tomorrow would have been. So I get it from a scheduling standpoint, but it's just things we have to wait almost a week since – everything wrapped up really, but I'm looking forward to it. It feels weird that it's still there. I feel like it should be on right now because everything was moving so flowing so smoothly, but now it kind of got derailed.
Yeah. And to those complaining that it was basically a week off. Yeah, it sucks, but you gotta remember folks, they're booking hotels, they're booking all this stuff. And it's not as easy just to switch things all of a sudden. Cause you imagine New York, hey, we need to change 100 rooms from, you know, so-and-so. Like it's probably not the easiest thing to do because they're staying in really nice hotels where all like, it's not convenient. So that's the downside to it. Travel, obviously TVs, they set aside their allotted times for this, that, and the other. It gets a lot more to it than just let's go play baseball. Cause trust me, I'm with you. I'd love to see the game on right now first pitch would be like an hour from now. Cause that's the schedule of every game, but you know what I mean? It'd be fun to have that going instead of waiting until Friday, but we'll wait. And hopefully, I hope we get seven. That's all I hope for. This has the makings of two powerhouse teams. It could be some pretty fun stuff, hopefully, but we shall see.
Did you see the ticket prices at all?
Yeah. And I laughed because I remember when I went in 2010, scalped Upper Deck tickets. Most I ever, at that time, ever paid for tickets in my life, paid $500 for Upper Deck, like third row from the top. But I'm like, I gotta go. I'm like, I'm never, it's gonna happen. So I went. 2012, paid $750 for seats, very similar. And I didn't go in 2014. So I saw the prices that were like basically $1,100 for the cheapest seats or something. And I'm like, whew, I think I lucked out on this one because that's getting a little rough there.
I mean, that's not far off though. The 750. I mean, considering
if I'm a lifelong fan and it hasn't been in forever, I would do it probably. I would be really. It would suck like if they got smoked or something, but I would do it because it is an experience. It is like they do the flyover. The place is just going bonkers. Like it is. It's pretty cool. And then when Pablo Sandoval gets 3 home runs in one game and stuff like that, and Juan Uribe hits a dong shot to left center field. Like it's just things that you don't forget, obviously, from decades clearly. Ago. But so those are pretty awesome. So I get it. It's one of those that though, like I get where it also pigeonholes a lot of people. Like it makes it really tough.
I think that was standing room only, at least for the Yankees.
Yeah.
I looked, I want to, yeah, I got the email from the Yankees, saying oh, they're on sale. I'm like, no, they're not. They're all gone already. By the time I went to the Yankee website, it's nothing's left. And then I think I went to StubHub first or one of those sites. And the minimum was like 1,100 and that was standing room only. So, I mean, it's one thing to go, but I don't know. They also play Monday, Tuesday, I think all the home games for the Yankees again. I think that's how it was in the ALCS as well. So it kind of makes it a little more difficult as well, but it's all right. I mean, I don't know. Maybe something changes, but I doubt I'm going for this series. But hopefully they'll be back relatively soon.
Yeah, they're built for it. Let's put it that way. But the Yankees are usually always built for it. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, prices are nuts. Like I'm not going to go on a golf diatribe, but the Ryder Cup prices are absolutely insane. So that's the world we live in now, unfortunately. I got some ticket prices to concerts. I was like, it's just – not like it used to be, but I digress on that one. Let's talk fantasy baseball here. We're going to talk BABIP, like we mentioned, guys that struggled. We're going to talk 400 plate appearances. Basically, we started with just qualified hitters. Ben, the smart man that he is, noticed that there's only like 129 players that qualified, which is pretty crazy. So we lowered it down to 400 plate appearances to add a few more guys. So we'll go through this list. No crazy order. They're going to be kind of scattered around here. But some that stood out, some will be like, really, like, wow, this is awesome. Some it's like, nah, that's kind of who they are. But just wanted to bring them up in discussion points for something to talk about on a Monday or a Tuesday evening in October. So we'll talk with Anthony Santander. He had the second lowest BABIP on the season for players with at least 400 plate appearances. That's pretty wild when you think about Anthony Santander, because his BABIP was a whopping 225, but he hit 235 with 44 home runs, 102 RBIs, 92 runs scored. I know we talked about Santander before and, you know, BABIP, home runs take away BABIP, obviously. That is a thing. But still, like, he's a 299 BABIP the year before, Ben, 248, 275. He's been at least 250 or higher, basically, for a while, dropping to 225 now. Is there anything that stands out to you when you look at this profile? Does this make you even more excited to potentially dig in on Santander for 2025, or what are your thoughts here?
Yeah, I mean, when we talked about it last week, I think I mentioned Santander's Statcast was pretty uninspiring considering how many homers he hit, and so you think there'd be a lot more red than there was. But I mean, just in general, the one thing that I noticed is his fly ball rate. So this year it was 54.5% or almost 55%, and that for me kind of just explains why the BABIP was so low. That many fly balls. I mean, if they're not going out, they're going to get caught for the most part. And this is something that Kyle Schwarber had an issue with. And that's why I was kind of hesitant to draft him going into this year, because Schwarber had like a 200 average last year. And it's just hard to stomach an average that low with that many plate appearances. But I mean, considering how low the average is, like Santander doesn't strike out a lot. So that helps him a lot. I mean, if he struck out 25%, it'd be even worse, his average. And with the BABIP, the one thing I usually look at first is XBA, and his XBA is 233, and I think that factors in all those fly balls. So not too surprising when you see his profile, and at least with Baltimore, he has the shorter porch when he's batting left-handed most of the time, that is. And one other thing that's good on Savant is the expected homers, and he outperforms his expected homers by almost 7. And, I mean, this is more of a BABIP show, but it's just saying that I think he got lucky in general, because he had 44 in the year, and a lot of the homers by park, when they estimate that, is in the 30s. So I think he's just selling off for the power. And I mean, it really came through this year, but I'm definitely a little hesitant to move him up too high, I think, for next season.
And we'll clear it up here. We're using BABIP to help open the door to talk about players. So if you want to talk home runs, because I was going to go a similar angle. Like I saw the increased fly ball, like you mentioned, which is huge. His home run to fly ball also jumped to 17%. Hasn't done that since 2020. It's been like 12.7, 14, 5, 13, 4. At the same time, like you kind of mentioned expected home runs. We talk about home runs per barrel. Dude had 44 homers, 55 barrels. For those quick with math, that's 80%. The normal number is usually 60 to 65%, give or take, home runs per barrel. So again, to your point about expected home runs, overachieving, one might say. Now, this is not downplaying Santander. Dude's really, really good. Been established. Pretty sure he's a free agent this year. Now that we're talking about him, yeah, he is a free agent this year. So landing spot could be interesting. Something that, Ben, you mentioned before the show when we talked about things. So it's not downplaying him. It's also, I'd be kind of hesitant on a repeat type thing. I think the talent's there. Maybe you see a boost in batting average, but you see a decline in the power a little bit. You can still get, but still, even with that said, the projected homer is over 30 home runs. He's still probably going to be a 32 to 35 home run dude. Just know that 40 might be out of the question type situation. All right. Fun one. Literally, when Ben saw the list, he goes, again, this player's name, again. And I'm like, yes, because he's an absolute annoying conundrum. Not like a fun, let's really get excited about it, but Andrew Benintendi strikes again on this list. Benintendi had the eighth lowest BABIP on the season at 245 BABIP, hitting 229 with said BABIP. 20 home runs, though, for Benny. The first time since 2017. 50 homers, 64 RBIs, 3 stolen bases. I know we've talked about him before, and I know I'm going to talk about him a million more times this season just because I can't figure it out, Ben, but we saw some positives here with Benintendi. Even the X stats are liking what Benny Boy did. So what are your thoughts when you see this BABIP from Benintendi compared to, like, the rest of his production?
Yeah, it's interesting. So with Benintendi, he actually has a career 323 BABIP, I believe. No, he's a career 311 BABIP. And he was 245 this year. And last year, 301. The year before that, 352, 309. And when you look at his expected stats, his XBA was only 248. So he wasn't supposed to be that much better. But so digging into more of the profile of his fly balls, I mean, his batted balls, the one thing that kind of stands out a lot, I mean, so Benintendi's fly ball rate went up from 35 roughly to 42 this past season. So increase of roughly 7%. That's a fair amount. And at the same time, his line drive dropped 7%. And I think that's where the BABIP kind of went away. So he probably sold out for those 20 homers when I don't think he should. I mean, maybe at that point, he's just like, screw it, I'm going to swing for the fences because we're so bad anyway. I'll have some fun or something, which I could see that being a thing. He had his highest ISO of his career for a full season, which is saying something. Yeah. But yeah, it's just, it's weird. I would bet on Benintendi having a better average next year unless he continues to sell for power. He is 30, so he's getting older. So maybe he has to do something to be more successful. Maybe the bat speed slowing down. It was 7th percentile. So that's, but usually with lower bat speed, you think of better contact. And I mean, the K rate was fine, but yeah, he's definitely a conundrum. And I wouldn't bank on 20 homers again after he had 5 the previous 2 years.
Yeah. He had an 83% home run to barrel rate. That's
theme right there.
Yeah. Trust me, didn't plan this, but when you were talking, I was like, oof, 24 barrels, 20 home runs. That's interesting stuff there from Benny Boy. And yeah, he's like, one reason people used to draft him late was batting average and steals. Batting average drops, power goes up, steals are still 3 steals. Like, that's not what you're looking for with Benny. And this is why I'm saying it's a conundrum. It's like, okay, is he going to go back to power or go back to batting average and speed, and you can use him late in a deeper format? Or is he actually going for power where he's actually becomes 12-team viable like he was for like the last 3 to 4 weeks of the season? That's where it gets interesting, because if he's not in for power, he's basically a fifth outfielder in a 15-type situation, like an seventh, eighth outfielder in a DC. That checks. But and at 12, he's not viable at all unless we see that end of season Benintendi, which is something I didn't expect to see. Let's put it that way. Very, very surprising stuff. Now, another one that shows up on the list here is the 12th lowest BABIP this past season. That's Josh Naylor. Had a BABIP of 246 with a batting average of 243, so almost in line, actually. 31 home runs, career high. 108 RBIs, career high. 84 runs, career high. six stolen bases to top onto it. So just an outstanding season for Josh Naylor. But man, to see a guy that's usually got a much, you know, better, well, somewhat better to much better BABIP in the past with the better batting average, because that's one of the skills we like to see with him. What are your thoughts on what we saw in 2024 from Naylor and this 243 BABIP?
Yeah, he's a little different from the other guys because looking at his batted ball profile, Naylor was more ground ball heavy. He had 45%. One of that is postseason. Let me go to my other page. Naylor had 46.8% ground balls this past year and a 36% fly ball rate. So he was more ground ball heavy. But the one thing though with Naylor is that, I mean, anyone seen him play or not, probably not too surprised. He has a 7% sprint speed, very slow. And his XBA was 257. So he definitely got unlucky when you look at his XBA. It's just wild to see, like you mentioned, that the BABIP and the actual average are so close together. I think it's a product of his homers and walk rate, because both of those, the walk rate shouldn't matter, but the homers, it's more of a homer and strikeout rate, excuse me. That's how you can compare the difference between average and BABIP, because a K is automatically out, no ball in play, and then a homer doesn't count, even though it's technically hit. But so I guess that's the perfect ratio, like his BABIP was. It's weird when it's like that. But yeah, I mean, with Naylor, I think he's just slow, hit too many grounders. Where's his line drive rate? His line drive rate was 16%. So I think 20% is kind of average-ish, or it's, you kind of want to be around 20% for the better hitters. And his, for the career, is 18% for Naylor, a little bit below that. So I just think he's too slow to hit that many ground balls. The power surprised me this year. Projections didn't have him for 30 homers. I mean, it was a career high by 11. He had 20 in 2022 and only 17 in 2023. So I guess it's good for him to hit more for more power, but he has to elevate the ball more. And the where's his launch angle? I'm not seeing it there. But the launch angle sweet spot's pretty low in Baseball Savant. And he's like a slow power hitter now, Naylor. So I guess he's going to be like any previous hitter that fit that mold, I think. And that's why the BABIP was so low.
Maybe like Prince Fielder, when it slowly keeps going away and disappears after a while, unfortunately, because, boy, you're getting big to play baseball, at least. And his home run to barrel, 79.3%. So we're sensing a trend here all of a sudden, which is pretty surprising to me. I was not expecting these things, but these kind of power boosts don't seem to not always stick, let's put it that way, on these players. All right, next up on the list here is a player that's been talked about a few times this offseason. That's Marcus Semien, coming off a down season for Semien, but still a good season, just down based on ADP. ADP is a lot lower so far in 2025, but Semien had the 16th lowest BABIP in baseball at 237, but he still hit 250 on the year, which, you know, not horrible all things considered. 23 homers, 101 runs scored in 159 games. He's just been a guy at BABIP 291, 263, 276. 260 was low, 294, 296 was high for a while there. So usually a much better BABIP, or better batting averages and more counting stats for Semien. But dude is 33 this past year, so got that going for him. Anything stand out to you with Marcus Semien? Because he's a guy that's falling in drafts as the production fell this past year, and it's hard to tell if it's age or just a down season.
Yeah, I think I was listening to Sleeper in the Bus earlier, and they were doing a similar exercise, but they were doing WRC plus fallers from 2023 to 2024. And some of the same guys that you had outlined ahead of time were the ones they were mentioning. And I think Semien was one too. And they were more optimistic that he was going to bounce back next year. But looking at Semien's Statcast, there's a lot of blue, like in the power metrics. The XBA was only 257. So 20 points more, which is a decent amount, but it's not like he should have hit 280 based on his batted ball data. And the average exit velocity for Semien is only 19th percentile. His bat speed's 10th percentile, so it's no power is supported by that. Hard hit's only 22nd percentile. Barrel rate's only 6.6%, which is pretty low. And yeah, he's going to be probably 35 for next season. He's 34 right now, according to this.
Yeah, he's 35 in September. Yeah.
Yeah. Most of the season he'll be 34 then, but he actually reduced his fly ball rate from the previous seasons, Semien, which is interesting. Higher ground ball rate, and you think it's slower, really. I mean, 81st percentile is still pretty good. I just think there's not really that much punch behind it anymore, and I mean, you mentioned his previous BABIPs. It is the lowest in the last few years. So maybe that does regress positively, and then he hits more like 270 or at least 260. But yeah, I mean, I'm not going to be too optimistic because of the age and how he's been a compiler for most of his value.
Yep, that's the bummer for me. I kind of passed on him. He went really late in the meatball draft, going decent prices elsewhere. So definitely a tricky one. Next up on the list on the season, Corbin Carroll had the 22nd lowest BABIP with 400 plate appearances or more, 256 BABIP, while he hit 231 on the season, 22 homers, 35 steals. We know the start of the year was very, very bad for Corbin Carroll. Picked things up in the second half, which is obviously a plus. And if you like dig into the BABIPs, if we're talking first half, second halves, it was 265 second half, 250 first half. So honestly, kind of similar. Now, September, he had a 300 BABIP, which will help. But we're looking at Corbin Carroll. This is a guy that most of us think bounces back next year. We see kind of the second half Carroll come back to life. Then again, still a lot of question marks. So when you look at this profile, his BABIP obviously low. The overall production got there in the end, but not to the extent many expected with an early first-round pick. So how are we feeling about Corbin Carroll from what we saw in 2024?
Now that I'm looking at his underlying metrics, I'm a little unsure. Mainly because of the power, he's kind of 50th percentile in XBA, X-slug, average exit velocity, barrel rate, hard hit percentage. The bat speed's pretty good, so that's good for generating some power. And then looking at the, it's going to be pretty monotonous. Like, I'm going to go through the same few things, like the bat ball profile, the savant info. Because like, if I saw a strange BABIP on a player doing my breakdowns, that's what I'm going to look at. So I'm just going to follow that process for most of the show. This for the listeners, so like they don't think I'm just doing the same thing over and over again, because I am, but there's a reason behind it. And with Carroll, kind of like with some of the other guys we talked about earlier, Santander and whoever else was one of the first ones, his fly ball rate increased in 2024. He was 20 in 2022. He had a 27% fly ball rate, which is great for someone with his speed. Not great if you want power. And then 2023 in his breakout, it went to 37%, which, okay, maybe that's a sweet spot. He went to 39, so not a big boost. But at the same time, his line drive has gone from 25 almost in 2022 to 19 last year, and then 16.7 in 2024. And someone else had that same issue as well. I think it may have been Simeon or someone before him. But the decrease in line drive is going to, I think, cause the batting average and the BABIP mainly to come down. And with the mediocre power, I mean, at least he's hitting it. Carroll's hitting the ball on the ground a lot, 44% last year, which he needs to do, I think, to have that boosted average. It's just, I don't think the shoulder's an issue because everyone's worried about that. I think I heard that he was striding towards the pitcher or like across the pitcher. So he's probably getting jammed a lot. And I mean, that's forgivable. I think it's more of a mechanical slump than anything. And he did get hot at the end in the second half, Carroll. But so I would expect an average bounce back next year. I would think the BABIP would probably be around 300, considering the type of player he is. So I just think it was a fluky result based on those, like the swing issue I mentioned before. So I'm not too worried about him, I don't think.
Yeah, and a BABIP back to 300 now puts him at a probably 270 to 280 batting average, maybe better. Puts him into more power, on base more for more speed. Does that move him back into the first round is the million-dollar question. Now, the first round feels pretty deep. There's no doubting that early on here. But I think that discussion, if we're starting to talk 25, 30 homers and maybe 50-plus steals, well, we're getting closer to Ellie territory with maybe a better batting average. So that gets interesting.
Yeah, he's definitely Ellie-like, but I think he's a better version of Ellie, I think, because of what he did in 2023, Carroll, was with the average, it's kind of almost 120 runs that year, 76 RBIs. I would take that over what Ellie did this year.
Yep, very, very fun. It's going to be a just nice discussion point to have later on this season. Alex Bregman, next. We're not going in numerical order the whole time. We're going to jump around here. Bregman's 34th on the list, 264 BABIP on the season, finish hitting 260, 26 homers, 79 runs, 75 RBIs. So the runs and RBIs are down compared to usual. Played 145 games, so not the whole season. Still a decent amount. Power in line with previous seasons. Batting average kind of in line with previous seasons. So what's your thoughts on Bregman here? He's going to be a free agent this year, but BABIP was down. But honestly, this is one of those guys where it wasn't far off from his normal seasons.
No, it was 270 2023, 260 2022, so right in the middle last year. And he falls into the Santander category of high fly ball rate. So Bregman had actually over the last 3 years, it's been at least 45% or higher. And it was 45.3 last year. Decent line drive rate. So he's a good hitter in general, Bregman. It's just that he does the pull fly ball thing where he can afford to do it in Houston. And the Savant is, there's a lot of blue besides the discipline metrics, like the barrel rate's subpar, 6.2%. His XBA was 260, which is what he hit. So he's right on the money. That's interesting. He's a slow Bregman, 32% tile sprint speed. And so I've avoided him in the last few years just because look what happened with Isaac Paredes. I mean, I don't think, I think Bregman is a free agent actually. So yeah, depending on where he goes, it could mean a lot for his value. And I don't know. I just keep avoiding him because I'd rather have a hitter that is just like can hit to all fields and is more of a complete player than like the Paredes or Bregman or even Arenado now type, where they just kind of have to pull the ball to be as successful as they are. But yeah, I mean, it's lower in terms of qualified hitters, but yeah, like to your point, it's kind of in line with his normal production.
Who he is, one might say. So definitely something to keep in mind. Now, I want to mention the 35th player on this board of a BABIP of 265, and that's Vinny P. Vinny P was having a much better season this year, even with the 265 BABIP hitting. Finished the year 262, 19 homers, 97 RBIs. Got banged up to finish the season, came back in the postseason. But I just wanted to highlight this because strikeout rate, outstanding. Walk rate, not bad. BABIP, kind of in line with last season. A little bit better, but kind of in line. So the reason I brought this up, and you can dig into the deeper metrics because there are some definite changes here and there, or at least some changes, not a major changes. But I kind of want to highlight, like, with everyone keeps saying, you know, Vinny P could be this, next step that. I kind of think we're seeing who Vinny P is, if that makes sense. So what's your thoughts on this one?
Yes, one thing that's annoying is that Fangraphs is showing the postseason numbers too. So I'm trying to not get caught up saying the wrong ones. So Vinny P had a 42.9% fly ball rate this past year and 39.5% ground ball rate. So that's not terrible. The one thing though, he's very slow. He had a 12th percentile sprint speed. His XBA was 266, which is good and not far off from his actual average, kind of like the last, like Bregman we just mentioned. Definitely more red for Vinny P. Average exit velocity is pretty high, 91 miles per hour. Hard hits, 46.5%. Barrel's kind of low, though, only 7.1%. And I think one thing I also said, the launch angle isn't the best for Vinny P. He actually, no, it's pretty deep. I think it was like 14 degrees.
14.6, yeah.
Yep, which is fine. I mean, at least it's not single digits. So he's definitely trying to hit for power. It's just, I don't know. Maybe he's like a 20 homer guy, I think. And he's so slow that, I don't know, I could see the average fluctuating. I mean, it hits it relatively hard, but I don't think hard enough to overcome the slow sprint speed. And he's probably more like a 270, 260 hitter, I guess, in the best seasons. But I mean, he is 27, so he could really break out still because he was pretty highly touted, I believe, as a prospect. But yeah, I don't know if I'll be getting too excited for him in drafts. I mean, he's good for like the RBI production you mentioned, but outside of that, he's kind of okay, I think.
Yeah, and that's just why I wanted to bring a guy like Vinny P up, because we get excited for him. He's great on Twitter, great in personality in general. Did the live show for one of the games last week with Brent Rooker and guests, so that was fun. But at the same time, getting aggressive in drafts on Vinny P is going to be a struggle for me, because right now his ADP is the 12th first baseman off the board of 114. I guess maybe not rich, but seems rich. I know the first base position is tough, I'll say that much. But when you're looking at Vinny P, like you said, you know, played 131 games this year. So what's he going to get you? 25 home runs maybe if he goes all year. RBIs, I can't always count on that. It is a good offense, so maybe it's nice. But his batting average kind of feels like who he is, 260 to 270. It's a really good stat line. I just don't know if it's, you know, the hype train behind Vinny P is much better than the results of Vinny P. And he's young, like you said, he could find another level. There's no doubting that. But if you're drafting for that other level, draft accordingly. It was the kind of thing I'm going to mention. So make sure you're paying attention to all that. But like Vinny P, but the hype might be a little too high for Vinny P. A teammate of Vinny P's is Mikel Garcia, who the hype was big on last draft season. Guilty. First month or so, really good. Finished the year on one of the biggest down swirls I think I've ever seen. He did have a 268 batting average, or BABIP, but hit 231 on the season, 7 homers, 37 steals. Still played 157 games, which honestly surprised me because I felt he was getting platooned so much by the end of it, Ben. But Mikel Garcia, just an absolute bummer of a season. And like, if you go down a splits page, you see a draw. He hit 142 in June, 161 in September, but it was 230 in the first half, 234 in the second half, but only one homer in the second half. It was just an overall ugly season for Mikel Garcia. What are you thinking when you look at him? Because if we can find that guy that produced, he's free in drafts, but can we find that guy?
He's one of the ones I'm more optimistic for a, like a legit bounce back in his BABIP. He had 344 BABIP in 2023, and considering how fast he is, that seems sustainable. I mean, one issue you said you were a big fan of Garcia, so was I. And the one thing that was promising about him as a breakout was how hard he hit the ball last year in 2023. And the one issue though was hitting too many ground balls. But in terms of average, he seemed pretty safe as an average asset. Unfortunately, he hurt you pretty badly there. And so even in 2024, his XBA was 264. So he was unlucky by 30 points according to that. So that's promising for him going forward. He still hit the ball pretty hard. He had an average X velocity of 90.4 miles per hour, which is 70th percentile. His hard hit was 65th percentile. And like the K rate was fine. So he's not being crazy like with his plate approach. It's just that for whatever reason, he didn't get enough knocks. And his sprint speed was kind of low last year at 66th percentile. I couldn't find right now what it was the previous year in 2023, but I'm sure it was faster than that. He still stole 37 bases, so he's definitely quick enough. He hasn't hit a lot of fly balls. It was his career high. I mean, he's had a very small sample to start his career. It was only 30% fly ball rate, which is, I wouldn't complain about that. If anything, we want him to hit for more power, hopefully. His line drive rate was 20%. And I think for whatever reason, he got unlucky. He was platooning or on the short side for a little bit, wasn't even starting. But I mean, if the price is low enough, I forget if you said what his ADP was. I would definitely be interested again in drafting Garcia. I just think he got unlucky this year.
Yeah, Mikel Garcia's ADP right now, 214, 22nd third baseman off the board.
So that's not much of a discount because he started out there last year and then he moved up.
People are still buying in the Mikel. So that's very interesting.
Unfortunate.
Yeah, I didn't expect the ADP to be that high given. We're talking four drafts so far, folks. Four drafts. So four hardcore degenerates out there. all right. Next up on this list, 43rd on this list, Allie Rushman. Just want to bring him up again because I know we talked about him before. I talked about him on the catcher review with Ryan. Ryan actually tweeted something because he's working on his box for the forecaster. And we say conundrum with Benintendi. Rushman's another one because his BABIP 272, hit 250. 19 home runs on the year, one steal. So he had 20 home runs last year. Still played 148 games, but that 250 average with that lowered BABIP was a bit surprising. I know people said he got hit in the hand at one point in the middle of the season and things changed, but you know, we saw a barrel rate it was lower than previous seasons. Hard hit rate was fine. So before I steal all your bullet points there, what stands out to you with a guy like Rushman? Like a lower ground ball rate will affect BABIP, but still it seems like there's much more to it.
Yeah, he didn't hit the ball too well. A lot of blue on his stat cast. The fly ball rate wasn't too crazy, only 43%. It was his career high, but I mean, that's not outrageous. It's not like it's Santander's, which is almost 50. But Adley just, his exit velocity was only 88.2 miles per hour, which is below 30th percentile. Barrel rate was 6.1%. And to your point about the hand, I wonder what these would have been like in the first half or before he got hit. I'm sure they were probably better based on how well he was doing in the first half. He was an all-star. He is slow for a catcher, so that's not going to help his BABIP at all. And I don't think he's really had a discount in drafts, but I would still take him for the volume he provides. And he's still only 26, and he's going to play all the time. He's in the DH for the Orioles when he's not catching. So I'm not too worried about it. But I mean, like we said with Garcia, maybe there's no discount yet on Rutschman. I mean, if there is, though, I'll be all about it.
Yeah, no, Rutschman is interesting if there were ever a dip, but sadly, there will not be a dip when it comes to Allie Rutschman. Not. He's third catcher off the board, ADP 65. So you're still paying for that one if you want some Allie Rutschman. 50th on the BABIP list here, Randy Arozarena. Got to talk about Randy, ADP or BABIP at 275, hit 219 on the year. 219. Still went 20-20, 20 homers, 20 steals, 77 runs scored. But this is a dude that's had a BABIP over 300 his entire career, every season back to 2019. You know, his last three full seasons were all 310 or higher, which obviously gets that batting average up and helps everything out with the Arozarena. And I look at the rest of his profile, and it's like barrel rate still is good outside of his one amazing year. Hard hit rate, he's, you know, good outside the amazing year. Like, a lot of things were strong. When you look at Randy's profile, like, this is why I held on to him all year, is there was so many things pointing in the right direction. But what do you see when you look at it? Maybe an unbiased opinion.
Yeah, I know he's your guy. But this is just proof of why he needs that high BABIP, because if it just drops any tiny bit, it's going to really tank his average. And he wasn't really an average help. He was kind of mediocre his previous three full seasons. But now with the low BABIP, he has an average that hurts you. And his XBA was pretty awful. So that doesn't only account for the batted ball quality, but also the K rate as well. And that was 10th percentile, 223. So he basically earned what he got for in terms of average. And I mean, the exit velocity was still pretty good. The hard hit was very good. The bat speed's above average. So he's going to be able to hit the ball hard still, in theory. And he's still very fast, 71st percentile. I mean, assuming that the batted ball sticks, maybe now that I'm looking at this, I think Randy just got a little unlucky. The K rate did go up from previous two seasons, 26%. That's still a concern for me. I mean, now that he's kind of cratered out a little bit with the average, it's more in my mind now, because there's always a fear, but now it's actually happened. So that's a different story now that we've seen it. And he's 29 right now, so he's still fine. He shouldn't really be collapsing yet. But I don't know, like these profiles where people are the free swingers are always risky at falling off the table sooner than other types of players. So, I mean, in terms of just like the ability, he still shows some pop, but I don't know. And moving to Seattle is not going to help. I don't know if he's going to be there next year. That's also something to consider. I mean, Tampa Bay wasn't the best place to hit, but he made it work. And I don't know. It's going to be tricky. I remember we discussed Randy before, and I was still unsure of how I feel about him, and I'm still not sure, but I don't know. That's another time.
Yep. He's not a free agent until 2027. So I think he'll be in Seattle, barring a trade. In the chat, PJ asked, how was Randy's second half? First half, second half, he hit 202 compared to 242, 12 homers compared to 8, 93 games compared to 61. So those are pluses. We saw a better second half given, you know, September he hit 220, August 225. It was June and July, the dude hit 291 and 284 with 8 of his home runs, 8 of his 20 homers. So that was a plus, 9 of his 20 steals. So June and July, Randy was awesome. Like, that was the Randy we knew and loved. Things got a little sketchy once he came to Seattle. Let's put it that way. So definitely some trepidation, like some cause for concern. At the same time, I still like the profile a ton. The overall profile, like I agree. Michael C says, I'm avoiding the Randy profiles. His contact rates are bottom of the MLB bad. In 23, it was good first half, bad second. If you have bad average cushions, it's okay. Agreed. There's a lot of like Javi Baez in this situation, which is terrifying. We've seen how that's gone as well. I think there's like a guy with 2020 potential and a minor spike in BABIP could go a long, long ways. So ADP, you still got to pay for him though. ADP is still 119. So, and I will say these early drafts are people that actually pay a lot of attention to fantasy for the most part. So not a lot of guys would be slipping through cracks so much, at least early ADP wise, I'd say, but we'll see. Interesting stuff there with Mr. Arozarena.
To Michael's point, Randy did have the second worst contact rate of the people that we're going to discuss tonight, or third worst. That's rough. 72.9% overall contact rate, and it's nice red on my sheet that I have here.
Yeah, that is not good at all. All right, 51st on this list, then we'll start going the other direction. So this is the lowest one we will talk about. That's Bryson Stott. BABIP was 275, so you're thinking, okay, good batting average. Dude hit 245 after hitting 280 last year, given his BABIP was 312. But so two out of the three seasons, we've seen 274, 312, 275. Who is Bryson Stott? 11 homers, 32 steals. So the steals was up. Power went down. Overall, just to me, a bummer of a season. But I guess in the end, kind of who he might actually be. He'll be 27 this next year. What's your thoughts on what we saw from Bryson Stott? Because I think I bought into him late. I had one share late in draft season going, okay, 25, he hit 15 and 31, hit 280. Maybe he's growing up, good offense, yada, yada, yada. He took a massive step back, even platooned at times in 2024.
Yeah, you kind of mentioned what I want to hit on, and that is I think last year, 2023, was the outlier. I mean, it's only been 3-year sample, but in 2022, his average and BABIP were basically the same as it was this past year. He actually had a lower average, but only a BABIP off by 1 point. And Stott's stat cast is there's a lot of blue. The only things that are red are his sprint speed and his plate discipline metrics. The barrel rate's 3.6%, which is terrible. The hard hit is only 10th percentile, 30.8%. Average X velocity is 87 miles per hour. And I feel like he kind of has the profile of Garcia, Michael Garcia, but I don't think they're treated the same way. And that's probably a deficiency in the market. If I had to, I mean, I'm sure Stott went down in ADP so far, but he was going last year in the early 100s, I believe. And
154 right now.
Yeah, I don't. Well, second base is worse than third. Well, I mean, third base isn't the best either from what I've heard, but I guess, but I don't want to take a guy just because
he's going to pick behind Bryce Turang.
Yeah, they're both getting over. I feel like they're both getting overdrafted. I mean, they're both second basemen, and second base is terrible, it seems like. But yeah, I don't want to reach on players just because the position is bad. It's if everyone is going to have a bad second baseman, then if you have one too, it's not really a big deal. I mean, if you get a top one, of course you have an advantage, but then you're losing out somewhere else. So that's a different story. But yeah, I think Stott just doesn't hit the ball very well. So the only thing that could really bail him out is his speed. And his XBA was 258. So, I mean, that's okay. But with no power, you kind of want a better average. And I'll probably be avoiding Stott, especially if he's going to be platooning next year again.
Yep. If he's platooning, it's a big no for me. All right, let's go back up the board a little bit here. J-Ram, Jose Ramirez finished 36th on this list with a BABIP of 265, yet he hit 279 on the season. 39 homers, 41 steals, 114 runs, 118 RBIs. MVP is literally his best counting stats season, best stolen base season, and tied for his best power season while hitting 279 along the way. What's your thoughts on J-Ram? Because also, if you want to do the quick math, he had 39 homers, 47 barrels. That's not quite that's very, very efficient, I'll say, to be nice. So, I love J-Ram. This is not a negative comment on J-Ram at all, but it does stand out that he pretty well out-succeeded his BABIP.
Yeah, this is the one that I added. And so with J-Ram, I did have him as a first rounder this year. I did take him on two teams. It's more so of like the back of the baseball card mindset versus, okay, like he's a stud, like as good of the top hitter as possible. Like he's not Judge, Alvarez, Otani when it comes to his batted ball profile, because just looking at his barrel rate over the last few years, there's actually a lot of blue in his career. It's only been 4 years when he's been above 50 percentile in barrel rate. This past year being one of them, he's 57th percentile. And I just thought it was interesting that he was kind of low in the BABIP side of things. I mean, but for his career, J-Ram has a average BABIP of 280, and it was 256 in 2021. In 2019, it was that as well. 2018 was 252. So he has a history of low BABIPs, but it's also because of all the home runs he hits and he doesn't strike out a lot. So he's taken away all those average points from the homers, but you're not really adding a lot of Ks that are coming out of the calculation as well. So that's why his average is sometimes multiple times has been higher than his BABIP. It's just kind of what happens, like the kind of how good of a hitter he is. And like his XBA was pretty good, 262. His X-Slug was 460, which are both over 70th percentile. It's just the barrel rate was 8.6, which is roughly average. And like he's still a great player, but he is 32, J-Ram. I know people were saying that they could take him fourth overall. I don't know if I would do that, just because I think there's other guys that aren't as close to maybe declining. He just hit 39 homers, but I mean, maybe that's a, it's probably a career year. He almost went 40-40, and people are going to pay for that, and it's probably gonna be a mistake. Like, he could still be a first rounder just based on the overall runs, RBIs, solid average, and power and speed. But I still think he's like a back end of the first rounder, and it's just interesting to see that he kind of outperforms what this, like, his underlying stats say he kind of should do. And it's been that way for a while with J-Ram. So I don't know what you think.
No, that's a good point. His ADP 6 right now, 6th off the board. So still going mighty early, but yeah, he continues to outperform it. It's great to see. As we like to say, though, eventually that comes to an end type situation. So do you keep paying the premium for him? I think I would, just because it's J-Ram, and eventually, yeah, it might bite you in the butt, but what year is that going to be? That's the million-dollar question. Dude is legit. Like everything Ben said, it's just some interesting stuff to look at, where it's like, hey, you know, we got these guys like, you know, Betts or Otani or all these others that, like, everything jumps off the page. And then you have J-Ram, who's getting it done perennially, just a little different way, one might say. So something to definitely to keep an eye on. All right, the fourth on this list. We're going back towards the top of the list here. With a BABIP of 233, that is Christopher Morel. Dude, it started out on fire, finished the season in Tampa Bay, hit 196 on the season with 21 homers while lowering his batting average to 26%. So 233 BABIP, 196 batting average, quote-unquote better plate discipline, if you want to just make it the lazy approach. But overall, struggle busted throughout the season. What's your thoughts on Morel? Is this guy we should be buying back in on this year?
I don't know. I'm going to be hesitant too. I think on Sleeper in the Bus, they were saying his ADP is in the 200s.
I got 246, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I need more of a discount on Morel to take a chance on him, especially now when it's DC season in a redraft league where you can cut him. I get going for the upside, but yeah, he lowered the K rate to your point, but it didn't really pay off. And his XBA was higher by 30 points, roughly. It was 227, this is XBA. He has 95th percentile bat speed. I think Morel should tone that down a little bit and try to make more contact, like he kind of did with the better K rate. But like, even his sprint speed is only mediocre now, 49th percentile. He was supposed to be able to steal bases. He had 8, but he was always like a power and speed flyer, and the speed's just kind of okay now. And if he can't make contact, then the power's not going to be there. So I just wanted to bring him up just because of how bad he was. And like, he was just really a black hole once he got traded. And I had him in my one DC for too long, and I think I hurt my average. Definitely did. But yeah, it's Morel. I mean, he also went to Tampa Bay, so they could maybe fix him. I don't know what they would do. And also, like, after the hurricane, they're not going to be playing there. So who knows what the environment's going to be for the Rays. Maybe that if it's like a favorable minor league park, then you kind of want to maybe take a chance. But as of now, I'm staying away from Morel.
Yeah, and he's interesting because the batting average dropped, but we saw a lower O swing by 4%. Overall swings dropped, but better contact, 6% increase on O contact, about 8.8% zone, about 3% contact increase just generally, which is interesting. We did see a little more ground balls. Fly balls are about the same. Infield fly through the roof. That's not really a sustainable stat you can take a peek at. And like Tampa Bay, they say the batter eye sucks. Maybe that was some adjustment for him. First half, he hit 282, second half 186, August 185, September 192. He had 4 out of his 6 months hitting below 200. That is bad baseball, folks. And in the last 2 months of the year, only had 1 home run in August and September. So maybe there's something to the situation when he went over to Tampa. I'm actually going to look at the game logs for just Tampa Bay in general. So that started July 30th. Maybe get another sense of what we saw from Christopher Morel. Hit 191, 3 home runs and 190 plate appearances. Struck out 29.5%, so that went up a bit more for Morel. If you look at the batted ball profile, 44% ground ball, 42% fly ball, 6% home run to fly ball. So, yeah, really, really rough go for one Chris Morel. Just the stat cast numbers, 6.8% barrel, 32% hard hit. Those are not Christopher Morel like numbers. So you mentioned new ballpark. That could be a plus. But, you know, young kid getting traded, the batter eye sucks. Do we get the grain of salt? Who knows? That's still a big grain of salt with Chris Morel, because I mentioned some of those months in Chicago still hit below 200. So not ideal. It's just tough because the power, like if he ever put it together, easy 40-plus home runs. Easy. Now can he put it together? That's the million-dollar question.
I think part of the problem, too, is that looking at his year-by-year Statcast numbers, he had a 50% hard hit rate in 2023, and it dropped 10% to 40% this past year. And the exit velo went from 92.1 to 89.2. So he just, like, that explains why the BABIP was so bad, too. It's not just the play discipline, which doesn't affect BABIP. It's just he couldn't hit the ball, and when he hit the ball, it wasn't nearly as hard. So he was just all out of whack, it seems like, or something's wrong. They going to take a lot of fixing, I think.
Yep. Or maybe he was hurt. We'll never know.
Yeah.
Ninth on this list, the old man, George Springer. BABIP 245, hit 220, 19 homers, 16 steals. Still ran way more than I thought he would. But, and the power, like a 1916 season from Springer, not bad. 220 average, not what you want from George Springer. So where do we stand on Springer right now after this 2024 season?
Yeah, it's like the exit velocity dropped to 87.5. It was always above 88, like upper 80s, 89% for a Springer, I believe. So, and he's 35, so that's kind of a bad sign. His bat speed was 52nd percentile. So without knowing what it used to be, I mean, in terms of the majors, he's okay. That's not, shouldn't be an issue. I don't know. He was interesting because of how you and Ryan discussed him, as I think he was one of your beer bets or something.
And yeah, Ryan was team George Springer. Yes.
Yeah. And I could see why. I mean, I'm sure the BABIP was pretty low at that point as well, but let's see what his first career, he's closer to 290, almost 300. And yeah, it was a big drop off. Like the only other time he had one that close to being that low was 2020. And that's a small sample. What's his batted ball profile look like? He had a big boost in ground ball rate, 50% this year. His line drive dropped to 16%. It was 20% the year before. His sprint speed's still okay though. So you think he would have, I mean, if you're hitting the ground balls at someone, I mean, that's not going to be a hit. So maybe he's got unlucky with that, but, and just in terms of him bouncing back, I mean, the barrel rate was fine. I think it was better than J-Ram's, honestly, if I remember correctly, but I don't know, the age, and then it's tricky. I mean, it's not as bad as you would think it is for Springer. So it's good that we're looking at him right now, but it's like with Randy, I'm not very sure how I stand yet, but there's signs pointing up and down for Springer.
Yeah, that's why Ryan liked him. There was like some positives for sure with Springer. It's just, I was more like the age, the injury, because like there's just so many factors for me. But leads off in Toronto, however good you want to take that, because Toronto was a struggle bus, but did get the, he played way more than I thought for back-to-back seasons. So that is a positive sign for sure. A couple more here. Austin Wells makes the list, and this is a good one because the dude mashed early on. September was horrible for Austin Wells. Finished the year with a 261 BABIP and 414 plate appearances while hitting 229, 13 homers, one steal, 55 RBIs. Like for 115 games to have 13 homers, 55 ribbies, hitting 229, like before the average part, things sound really good. But the September finish was not ideal for Austin Wells. So what are your thoughts here? 261 BABIP, 229 average, a guy you got to watch a lot.
Yeah, I'm glad they finally made Wells the primary catcher at midseason. Like Trevino's good, but the way the lineup was hitting, they needed the batting, the average help and the power help from Wells. I think the splits are still an issue. I'm not sure what Trevino's status is for next season, but it could still be a platoon for Wells. But I mean, anyway, most catchers don't play full time anyway, unless you're one of the studs. But I think
Trevino's not a free agent until 26.
Yeah, and Wells had a 530 OPS versus lefties this year, so he's not going to be getting full-time run anytime soon. But that's fine, though. I mean, it probably preserves his average for you. And I wanted to add Wells because, A, he stood out, but also I remember last year going into draft season for 2024, he had a really bad rookie year. He only hit, ironically enough, 229 that year as well. But his underlying numbers were pretty good. He had a 283 XBA in 2023 Wells. It dropped to 244 this year, but a bigger sample and the pitcher's adjusted. So now let's see if he can adjust back. His barrel rate was 9.1%, which is better than J-Ram's. I think that was almost what Springer's was. The X-Slug was 439 for Wells, which is good. So, I mean, as a catcher too, which is what he would be, I'm fine with these numbers for Wells. You can see in his rolling ex-woba, it really dropped off in the last several plate appearances and probably like the last 50. So that makes sense with the September swoon. And he is slow, so the average is not going to be there. The K rate isn't terrible. It was 21%. You can get away with that, I think. And if he can hit the ball a little bit harder, Wells, I think he could really be like a 260 hitter, a 250 hitter with maybe 20 homer power, because he only had 354 at-bats. So if he starts out on the strong side going into next season, he hits like 400, 425. Maybe he hits 7 more homers, and that's awesome. So I like Wells for next year. Hopefully his ADP doesn't rise too much, but I think the September slump could maybe suppress it a little bit.
Yeah, I'm still a Wells fan. ADP right now, 213. So,
oh God, that's it went up.
that's getting some love, because he was like a catcher 3 in almost all of my DCs this past year. Now, if you look at Wells catchers, he's the 13th catcher off the board.
So, that's the catcher guru. What do you think about that?
I don't hate it. I'd prefer him to be my catcher 2 still. I'll say that much. But
he's a DC1.
Yeah, I could see him. I'd like him to be my catcher 2 if possible, but I still like him at 213, because they're still decent. Like Kyber Ruiz goes after him, but then it's like, do you want to bounce back Bo Naylor, Jeffers, Kirk? I don't mind Hunter Goodman. It gets nasty the farther down you go down this list. So early look, October, late October look, I don't hate it based on the catcher pool at this point in time.
Maybe when projections come out, it might change things, because all those catchers in that one mid-100s kind of struggled, and you're naming some of them off right there that were going well ahead of Wells last year.
Yep. So it checks out the way the season went. But again, yeah, you said things could change when a lot of players play with projections now, and the projection systems, they'll adjust things. So we'll see how
fingers that crossed.
Yes. The 29th on this list, Cedric Mullins, had a BABIP of 261, finished the year hitting 234, but did have 18 homers and 32 steals, which is a welcomed return to the said Mullins world. Now he gets bumped that average up a little bit, which means also getting that BABIP up like he used to when he was really balling out. We could have quite the Cedric Mullins bounce back potentially, but that's kind of a wait and see mode. But really, all in all, a good season. I know you know it all too well. So what's your thoughts on what we saw from Ced Mullins?
Yeah, I added Mullins just because he's a faster player or faster runner, and seeing him have a BABIP so low is kind of interesting. And looking at his last 5 seasons, if you include 2020, his BABIP's going down every season. Of granted, it was 25 or 48 games that year when it was 350, but it went from 350 to 322, 299, 271, 261 in 2024. Mullins, for someone so fast, his ground ball rate's also going down every year. It went from 43% in 2020 to 33.7% last year. And his fly ball rate is, this is terrible, 49% last year, 48.8% in 2024. So he's swinging like he's Kyle Schwarber, and he's definitely not. And his stat cast is all blue, except for his whiff rate and K rate. Those are the only things that are red. And the sprint speed, of course. But yeah, it's just he's selling out for power he doesn't really have, which is weird. I don't know why he's trying to hit so many homers, or maybe something happened with the swing. But yeah, I mean, he's definitely at risk. He's a platoon guy now, and I don't know. I didn't want to. I'm not a masochist. That's not why I brought him up. But I just thought it was interesting. And
no, he has an interesting profile, because the power speed is awesome to look for on the draft table.
Like, that's why I drafted him.
Yeah, but you're mentioning some of the concerns, like he's moving closer to maybe some other guys we talked about earlier in the show, where like a Randy who at 219, 2020. Like, I'm not saying Mullins is going to do that, but we're seeing kind of a shift in the profile, which is less than ideal, I'll say, which at least brings the red flags when looking at it with Mullins. So to me, my biggest concern going into last season was just playing time with all the options they had in the outfield. But right now, Mullins' ADP is 223, going right between Soler and Buxton. I'd probably take a chance on Mullins, honestly, out of those three.
He probably needs to be at that point in the draft. So,
yeah, that's it'll be interesting to see. But totally understand why you took him. Totally could see myself getting interested in him yet again. All right, the last one we're going to talk about here, and this is a real fun one to finish with here, Joe Adell. Joe Adell, who people that had believed in Joe Adell for years were so excited for the start of the season, and then it went into crickets by the end of the year. Joe Adell's seventh on this list. If you had 400 plate appearances, the seventh lowest BABIP, 244. Dude hit 207 on the season for the second straight year, but he played 130 games, most of his career by far. 20 homers, 15 steals. These are fun things. We saw his bat, his strikeout rate drop from his previous two short stints in the big pluses. But that low BABIP, because even when he struck out a lot, BABIP was over 300 the last two seasons. Like, if he had that 300 BABIP this last year, God knows what he could have done. But when you look at Joe Adell, Ben, he's still 25. He'll be 26 in April. Still extremely young, all things considered. How are we feeling about Joe Adell?
Yeah, so I added Adell because you think of, okay, just striking out, and then you're assuming that everything else will be fine. But in this case, the BABIP was not fine, so that's why I wanted to look. And his XBA was 231, which is 20th percentile, but, I mean, a 231 average versus 207 is a huge difference. And if Adell's going 20-20, maybe 25-20 in a full season's worth of playing time, that's valuable. I mean, Randy had value still, and he was terrible. And Adell could easily top what Randy did this past year. Going to the into the profile, Adell did sell for power a little bit more. He had a 46% fly ball rate compared to a previous high of 40% in 2022. I mean, these are all small samples because he's been up and down so far in his career. He had a good line drive rate last year of 18%, or this year in 2024, 18%, and has a good amount of red. I mean, I think there's more red than Santander had, maybe. Adell has a very high bat speed. It's 98th percentile. So maybe like with Morel, he needs to kind of tone that down a little bit to maybe make more contact and then maybe some more homers. Because like if you swing, I know it's hard, like thinking of me, like trying to slow down your swing, it's hard to do that, but I don't know, maybe makes an adjustment mechanically that fixes it or something. And like the X slug was 431. The barrel rate was 11.7%, which is 79th percentile. I'm sure he's probably going to have a high ADP Adell because there's no one ahead of him really in Los Angeles that's going to stop him from playing. There shouldn't be. But yeah, I think if you're – and his sprint speed's still 86th percentile. So when you're running that fast, your BABIP shouldn't be an issue. But like the ground ball rate did decline. I mentioned 35% this past year. So I'm interested in Adell. I mean, if you have a good batting average base by the time it comes to take Adell, you definitely go for it. But just surprising to see him so low on the BABIP list, and I wanted to dig in a little bit.
No, I like it a lot because I'm looking at his month-by-month splits. Awesome March and April, like we expected. May hit 144. June hit 139. July 211, but 277 in August. Only played five games in September, so he found something to get in August. I remember hearing something about, like, they worked on his, like, stance or something during the break, and then it kind of carried over type thing potentially. So he had two really, really good months. 15 of his 20 homers came in three of the 5 months, so keep that in mind. But 239 in the second half, five homers. Is definitely. I think there's room to be interested. ADP is 300. Like, that seems like the kind of guy I'd be willing to take a shot on late, knowing I can drop him if I have to. 15s might be a little trickier for you because there is so much volatility in his profile. But in a 12, this is a guy that kind of excites me a bit. If he does have that 2020 potential, that BABIP just bumps enough so he's hitting 245, 250. Like, this dude becomes interesting in a big, big way. Like I said, 26. You mentioned who's going to stop him from playing in LA. Like, really. The only person stopping him is Ron Washington because we've seen how he operates things in there. But I am interested, and I'm glad you brought him up because that's a name that early in last season, April, everyone's on fire. Jadell's the man, best fab pickup in the world. And then things got bleak there, real bleak for the Joe Adell believers out there. So that's a definite fun one to dig in on. Someone I have a feeling might talk about more this offseason to kind of get a better feel on him at the position and so much more.
One thing that I'm concerned about, though, looking at his splits, is his lefty-righty splits are not good. He's much better versus lefty, so that's not good for his playing time prospects.
But yeah, in reality, his future might be
Randall Grichuk or something.
There you go. I was looking for a name. I'm like, Soler actually plays every day now. So, Grichuk, that's a great one. He could platoon with the Jock. So he needs to go to a team that, like, he needs to go to Kansas City. Let Kyle Isbell face the righties and let him face the lefties. And there's your platoon in Kansas City real quick. So.
But then he's not really valuable for fantasy because
he loses all
looking
fantasy.
For a two or three lefty week, a short, like, half weekend. How often? So we I mean, those happen more often now, yeah. but –
Exactly. Want him in LA because they'll play him no matter what. Now, to our benefit or detriment, you decide. But they'll play him like a real team that we would platoon him in. Yeah, then it's you need the right week to make things happen in a big, big way. All right, Ben, we'll wrap it up there. Hit a handful of players. Fun discussions digging into some of them. Some pretty obvious. A lot of them at least gave us something to think about, I'll say, as we dig in more this offseason. But any final thoughts as we wrap up another episode? You got your guys kicking it off or starting things off first pitch Friday night. Any final thoughts before we wrap up the show?
I thought about suggesting the BABIP overachievers, but maybe we'll do that another week or whatever. But I think it's cool to play at both ends.
I was thinking about that for next week. I'll just flip it and the guys at the top of the list and we'll kind of play that game too.
Yeah, because I think it's kind of grounds you more on the guys that have breakout seasons potentially. 100%. Go Yankees. Hopefully they can pull it out. I know everyone's upset that it's two powerhouses playing in the World Series, but it should be good baseball. Like be like Bubba, pick your least or your most least favorite or your least favorite, I guess, to root for. And hopefully it's the Yankees. But it was a good we had a lot of people talking. I was surprised at how active
chat. Yep.
Yeah. A lot of people showed up on a Tuesday in October, so that's great. But
Baseball, baby. Baseball.
Never dies.
Just let me. It's real simple, Ben. Real simple. I'll help you with this. Beat LA. That's all you need to know for the next four wins that you need. Beat LA. That's simple. Hopefully, when we talk next week, you're up 3-0 or something, and you're cruising. I doubt that's the case because I respect the hell out of this Dodgers team. Like I know I talk my trash because that's what I was born and raised to do. This team's a good team. It's a dang good baseball team, and I love watching like Shohei and those boys play. So. It's bittersweet. And last little side note. So I did 13 of those pennant underdog playoff drafts. I got two into the LCS. I got one into the finals now, and it's a Dodgers stack. So, in a roundabout way, if the Dodgers do well, I can win some money. So it's a catch 22 at least, happiness hedge. So we'll see.
So how many of those did you win money for getting out of the first round? Because I think – that's
only the first, only the two, only two advanced.
Okay.
And it's weird because, like, I know I talked about it on my other shows, is it's kind of luck on the draw and where you get reseeded. Like, I was tied with the team that I beat going into that Dodgers Mets game. He had a Mets Yankee stack and I somehow beat him. But both of our scorers would have beat everybody in the other one I was in. So it's kind of like it was one of those just luck of the draw type situations. And
all right, well, for your sake, hopefully it's a lot of blowouts. It goes game seven and the Yankees win.
That's what I need. I need the Dodgers, if when they win, to just beat the snot out of them. And when the Yankees win, like 2-0, right. Something like that.
As long as the Yankees win more than the Dodgers, I don't care.
That's fine. That's fine. So we're good there. But we'll talk more about that next week, see how things are going in the World Series. We'll do some reverse on the BABIP. We'll look at the guys that maybe overachieved or had high BABIPs and what to expect from that next week. But until next time, check out Ben on Twitter at @BreakingBen_T. I'm at BD Entrick, and this was Bench with Bubba, episode 694. Catch y'all later.